I don't want to be a good man. I want to be a great one. I want to be Harry Houdini and Thomas Edison all rolled into one.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome back to the Dragonreel podcast. This is episode 17. We're going to talk about Oz, the great and powerful. And I look forward to being served. I'm Chris. With me tonight in chair number two, he'll never solidify a life debt until he's sure you're a wizard. Here with us tonight, it's Pete.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm just happy to be here.
I'm glad you're here, too. In chair number three, sure, she's good. She's only hanging out in graveyards wearing black cloaks, ironically. It's Sharon.
I just like the quietness in the cemetery, and black is my favorite color, but I am a good witch.
Well, black does everything, so that's not surprising.
Black does, it's just so mysterious and kind of slimming. I just,
that's true.
Well,
as Neil Gaiman said, black goes with everything. Well, everything black.
But
that's why they tried to get us. Yeah.
Oz the Great and Powerful came out in 2013. It's a fairly recent movie. Not the most recent we're doing, but pretty fresh as our standards go.
True.
And I would say Oz was pretty fresh in that movie.
Wait.
Oz was pretty
fresh. Whoa. Yes, he was.
You know, how many women did he have in that movie? At least five? Six?
So I kind of feel like when you take a movie that references something so beloved as The Wizard of Oz, which was the movie we did in the last episode, there are certain expectations that people have going in, and I think this movie bears, you know, analysis on a lot of points related to that, like how it fits in with the books compared to how it fits in with the movie, you know, how it visually or technically references the 1939 movie, you know, whether it has the same kind of weight or impact, you know, culturally.
Right.
Spoiler, it doesn't.
How can you say that? Yes, I know.
and you know, what we thought of the movie, really, and, you know, what the context of its being made, you know, gives to the movie. So, Pete, you saw this in the theaters.
Yes, I did.
Tell us about that experience.
I only saw it in 2D. I did not catch the 3D experience because that upsets me and makes me nauseous. So, when I saw it, one of the first things that sort of struck me about it was the fact that you had that whole opening sequence in sepia. And that,
right. Well, you know, Pete, in this one it actually was black and white.
Well, in my version it was sepia.
Was it really?
Yeah.
On the Blu-ray it's black and white.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
So, anyway, streaming it's in sepia. So,
I think you mean sepia.
No, I mean
sepia. Oh my gosh, brothers. Brothers, but please.
I don't want to sound insipid, but I'm going to say call it sepia. It's sepia. So, it was a nice callback, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, when he transitions into Oz, you have that same kind of hyper-real color.
Right. And it's very vivid when he gets, I think, even more so than the original.
Oh, I agree. I think because with the technology, you have the ability to bring so much more to the screen, especially the big screen. It really was a feast for the eyeballs.
Right. And this is the exact thing that Sharon misses out on when she watches this movie.
Right.
Right. Can I add something there that
I wish you would.
At 20 minutes in is where it changed to color, and that was the same point that it changed to color. In
yeah, we timed it at the original. That's almost exactly the same amount of time.
Wow, so that's
interesting
exactly the same time that you start Dark Side of the Moon, huh?
You know, we didn't try that. And
we didn't try it, but interesting. Oh, so I think that was a deliberate connection. There.
Oh, I agree. I believe that they did a lot of mirroring here so that because Disney obviously couldn't use anything from The Wizard because doesn't MGM still own that?
Yeah, and that's another thing is like Disney made this sort of prequel to a movie that they don't own.
Right, exactly.
Which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
But again, you know, it's the era of bold reimagining, so it's not all that
sure.
surprising.
And there's actually enough that was taken from the books instead of the movie. There's enough non-reference to the movie,
right.
That this kind of isn't really a prequel to the movie. It's really for the books.
The other thing that I really liked about it was the fact that during some of the master shots, some of the big sweeping shots, it looked like it was a matte background.
And I agree, especially on the city.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Sam Raimi actually went with practical effects on that, but whoever the CGI guy is, or guys are fantastic.
So, as a blind person, are you guys saying that they paid attention to details, like, for example, the mat would be, like, showing the outside of the Emerald City, and they did that in this one? Is that what you mean?
Yes, and they show, like, the yellow brick road, you know, winding down into out of sight,
okay,
and then appearing again on the rise that you're looking from.
I see. Okay. And I also want to just...
Very similar to the 1939 movie.
I want to add that there's audio description for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so if people are listening to this podcast and wondering, is this a good movie for blind folks? Can I just say yes, that I thought it was one of the better jobs done with audio description.
Nice.
And Disney is getting really good about it.
Yeah.
Almost
they
every
really
Disney
are.
Blu-ray that comes out is going to have audio description.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's excellent.
I used to bag on Disney so bad for, like, the way they market stuff and the way they just sort of indoctrinate themselves into culture.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, like, putting out these releases on Blu-ray with audio description, you know, good on you, Disney.
I think it's wonderful. It was well-timed, and it was a very fun experience for me to watch it twice in the last month. Absolutely,
nice.
Yeah.
And I still feel that even though you got good audio description, there's a lot that it really can't be described because it's so visually offbeat.
Right.
And it's so...
It's rapid fire and intense as well. So
yeah,
there's
exactly.
A lot of stuff coming at you visually, which is great for somebody like me because I am very visually oriented.
Well, Chris did pick on the audio description where when the good witch became the bad witch...
Yes.
What is her name? I just lost it.
Theodora.
Theodora.
Thank you, Theodora. And the audio descriptor said her face turned green, and it said she had thick eyebrows, and Chris said, I wouldn't say they're particularly thick.
You don't actually see her face in that scene when she transforms.
Mm. Right.
You don't see her face until she shows up in Munchkinland.
True. So, the other thing that I liked about that scene was the fact that the interaction between Theodora and Evanora is done with Theodora in silhouette. Or it's a shadow.
In shadow, yeah. You just see her shadow. And actually, I wasn't real happy with that shadow effect because it didn't really look... I mean, it lacked the sort of reality you would expect from someone's actual shadow.
Hmm.
Which I didn't which I didn't mind so much because of the play of what's going on with the two sisters.
I know what you're saying, but
right.
it was still distracting because it was kind of that uncanny valley kind of thing.
Fair enough.
Okay, I'm just wondering if this movie is as much of a children's movie as The Wizard of Oz. I ask you guys that because it was sort of a complicated plot.
I was actually going to bring up that same question, and Sharon and I did not talk about this. One of my main questions was, is this too complicated for the same audience that The Wizard of Oz was aimed at?
Well, let me answer that in two parts. Part one is that a porcelain doll will cut a bitch. And part two is... Part two is, how short of a shrift can you work into a children's movie?
Uh-huh.
Because Theodore got the shortest shrift in cinema in the last 20 years, easy.
Yeah?
Talk about railroaded.
Yeah, and she was really dramatically... I mean, she was like, I'm so sweet and innocent. No, I'm wicked! No, I'm sweet and innocent. And no, I'm horrible! She was like, you know what it was? It was like watching the Bipolar Express.
Yes, good one.
Well, okay, so once are you guys saying
armored by polar bears?
But I think she was good, but she fell in love with him, and he didn't love her back. He thought she was beautiful, and
the whole point behind Evanora was the fact that there is this power within Theodora, which could cause the world to burn.
Right.
And she warns her that you're wicked inside. Well, you are wicked inside. Which is Evanora manipulation in my book, but I think layers like that are a little too nuanced for a children's movie.
Yeah,
I think this was aimed for a more adult crowd who went to see it because they have a certain love of, you know, the 1939 movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, after watching it the first time and then starting to watch it the second time, I was confused as to who was controlling the baboons. I mean, obviously, after getting to the middle of the movie the second time, I'm like, okay, Evanora's been doing this the whole time.
Yeah, it was her, the evil sister.
But
right,
it seemed
right.
like a reveal that was too long coming the first time. Once you know that Evanor is the bad guy, and you pretty much know that when you meet her.
Right.
Or that she's more manipulative and savvy than she's letting on.
Right. She's basically an awful person.
Right.
Yeah.
Then it becomes clear that she's the one that's probably going to be the bad guy. But at that point, you're like, but who's controlling the bad stuff? You know, who destroyed the...
No, you see, I think that I... Having rewatched it, I think it was kind of plain that Evanora was the one pulling the strings. Because Theodora was such an ingenue, you know, through most of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just tell, I mean, it's...
You could tell
that Evanora is the alpha dog, and she's always the one...
She was.
Behind it.
And she did trick her sister, and when she had... After she bit into the apple, which is also very symbolic in many cultures and religions...
For so many reasons. Let me play this. Let me play this one.
One bite is all it takes. One bite, and your world will change forever. One bite, and your heart will become impenetrable. One bite, and you and I will finally share the throne.
This is, like, referencing, like, all the other things where the apple was the bad, you know, was the poison thing.
Right.
But it's also the Garden of Eden.
Yes. I mean, that's what I thought of right away. Is
one bite and you will know the difference between good and evil.
And they did.
Right.
And she did.
She knew it right away. She said, "Oh, you're the wicked witch." But she could, you know, at that point, you know, I feel sorry for her, and you know, my heart just bleeds for her because you know we've all been brokenhearted, and if you had that magical apple to harden your heart, Would you take a bite?
But she doesn't say it hardens. She says it withers away.
Withers away. But, you know, when you're sad and your part's broken, who's really listening to words that the evil person's saying? And she's
Well, no, because at that point she stops and she goes, why does it hurt? Oh, that's just your heart withering away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, so sad.
Right. And so there's another prequel story to The Wicked Witch of the West, which contradicts this. And so, I mean, I'm sure there are people who will see this and go, well, that's not how Wicked went. You know, but this is not that story.
Musical.
This is not Wicked.
The musical.
But in this version,
it's also that there's a book, isn't there? I think it's Wicked.
I think it's Wicked, Chris.
But anyway, so in this version of her history, she's really kind of a pathetic character. I mean, I don't mean she's a terrible character and we're not interested in her. I mean, like, nothing that happens to her is really anything that she did.
It's not her fault, yes.
Right, it's not her fault. She's led, she's corrupted.
I don't know if I would use the word pathetic. I have sympathy for her.
Like I said, she's an ingenue. She's overly innocent.
Right.
And you know that Oz isn't even in love with her in the beginning because he immediately hands her the music box, which we already know from the beginning part that he only gives those music boxes to people that he doesn't care about. Now, I have a question. When the evil witch says he came to my room and we danced all night, was she making it up? Because I've seen it twice now, and I still don't know.
Yeah, yes, she was making it up.
That was a lie. Okay.
Totally lying.
I was just wondering. So she was already playing on her sister's jealousy at that point. So did anyone catch the sexual undertones in this movie?
No.
You mean this right here?
I have been protecting the Emerald City whilst we awaited your arrival. I'm here to serve you as I served the king before you.
Well, I look forward to being served.
Sister, I like him already.
Me, yeah. Also,
yeah, I mean,
she and he danced all night? Come on.
Yeah.
Yep. Under electric candlelight?
Wow.
Oh, you're killing me.
So, the China girl, I thought she was a really cute character. And Chris and I disagree a little bit on this one.
The China girl was set up by this. So, just like the original, there are reflections of his real life in Oz. And I say his real life because, well, in The Wizard of Oz, it was a dream.
Yes.
And in this one, they kind of make it seem like it's the same kind of setup. I mean,
yes,
especially with
the parallels.
Right. So this happens in his stage.
Let me walk.
What's that?
Let me walk.
Not now, kid. Let us leave the wonders.
I believe in you.
Yep.
Oh my God, that just rips at my heart.
Right.
And I have to say, I love that actress's voice. Can we say her name?
Joey Young?
Yes. I think she got an award for doing.
She did get it. She got a voice acting award.
Yeah.
Might I also say that he missed a golden opportunity there because he just had to light the wheelchair on fire. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
Okay, get the hell out.
Make you walk. All right. Run for your
wow.
life.
Wow.
I got to speak of parallels here, and there was also this right here. Here's his assistant, J.D. It's not J.D., but that's who it is.
Frank.
I didn't really think it was that bad.
Of course not. You're just a trained monkey.
We totally missed that.
And then
that
he
first.
Plays the monkey, and the girl that couldn't walk plays the China doll.
Right. So everything he fails at in his normal life, he succeeds at in Oz.
Right. He and Glinda hook up. Well, he and Annie, blah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
But I have a theory about Frank, his assistant.
Yes, which theory?
Okay.
Okay, so he is Traveling Circus Frank, who's the great-grandfather of TV's Frank.
Okay. So, was he supposed to press the button?
Well, you see, exactly. But that's the whole thing. At one point, you know, he even, like, gives him the look, and that's when he switches over to the slide whistle, you know? Stuff like that. So he knows he knows where the buttons are supposed to be. And then and then what he begat was Vaudeville Frank. And then Vaudeville Frank begat Silver Screen Frank, and he begat TV Frank.
I think you're really reaching for an origin story here. This is like the Phantom for Frank.
Now, Chris, you read the books. Was the China Village, I thought I remembered.
There was a China Village,
yes. And but the part about the girl's legs being broken, did they just...
It was a different part of the story. It wasn't in the prequel story of the Wizard.
Okay.
And, in fact, I didn't read that one. I mean, there is a little bit of background given for the Wizard in one of the books, but I haven't read it.
Okay.
But his name that he gives in the movie is actually from the books.
Oh,
awesome.
Oh, and this is a reference in this movie to the other movie memorabilia.
Okay.
Hmm.
So in the black and white part, he says this.
Well, how do you think I feel? Man of my talents, I should be playing the Orpheum Circuit. Instead of some dusty podunk, a secondhand jacket falling apart at the seams.
Now, that is a reference to the fact that when Frank Morgan was looking for a costume for his wizard character, they went to a store and got a secondhand jacket, and in the lining of the jacket it says, this was made for L. Frank Baum.
Nice.
Wow.
So it was like a little reference to something that, yeah, I know, it's like super small world going on.
Also, I don't know if you caught this, but if you look really carefully at the statue of the fallen king, it's Frank,
okay.
It's Frank Morgan.
Is it really? I didn't notice that, because I guess I'm daft.
Well, the,
no, you're not daft. It was the fact that because of certain uncontrollable situations, I had to keep backing up and replaying that scene over and over again until I finally got to watch it the whole way through. So
awesome.
Between people walking in on me, Calista trying to pull things down, and my nephew and his friends being way too loud outside, I was like,
oh.
Okay, what the hell? What the hell? Oh, I think that's Frank Morgan.
That's awesome.
I don't know if you caught it, Pete, but the name of the circus is the author of the book.
Yeah, L. Frank Baum.
Yeah.
Right, and J.D.'s character is Frank.
Right.
Yes.
Of the Baum brothers.
Right.
Yes.
Presumably of the Baum brothers.
Presumably.
Maybe not.
But L. Frank,
yeah.
L. Frank grew up just 10 miles away from here,
uh-huh.
in Chattanooga, where they actually have a yellow brick road.
Oh, that would be
pretty groovy.
That would be cool to walk on.
It is fun.
So the opening title also said it was 1905, which I have a little bit of a problem with because of the timing of, you know, when Dorothy would have arrived and, you know, the age of the wizard at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how firmly the wizard was entrenched in Oz. You know, society
oh,
by then.
Oh, Chris, it's another dimension.
I know,
who knows
because,
how time's going to run?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean.
So that was kind of like a hand wave. And the reason why it had to be 1905 is because he had to admire Edison.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha, gotcha.
Yeah, because so
he had to bring up the Wizard of Menlo Park and have, and also have a Praxino graph.
Right.
Yes.
Praxino graph? Praxinoscope. Praxinoscope.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
So that's a thing.
So I guess we were saying it is kind of a confusing plot, and they did that. What is the term called when they try to get you in a movie? Like the whole thing about Glinda being in the graveyard. They tricked us. They tried to trick us, but I thought there was a term for that in movies.
A fake out. Not sure that's a movie term, but it's, you know, it's what it was.
Yeah. Yes. That's why, you know, I started the whole thing with, you know, yeah, I'm wearing black and I'm in a cemetery, but I just like the peace and quiet.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know if
I think it is too nuanced to be considered a children's movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, plus you have like little things like the China girl whipping out a knife and
Right. Well, there's no foul language at all. So I think it's, you know, I think it's appropriate, but I think some of it might be over their heads.
I don't know. I'd like to find an 8-year-old and play it for them. And maybe we should get Sabrina and then just have her watch it with her and just.
I couldn't watch it with Ronan because when we went to see it on the big screen, he kept calling.
He kept what?
He kept calling.
I'm sorry. He kept calling Mila Kunis Carmen San Diego.
Awesome.
It was like, she's not Carmen San Diego. Stop it.
So Mila Kunis in this movie, I don't know if it's this movie or all movies for Mila Kunis, but I thought she looked like, if Angelina Jolie and Betty Davis had a kid, it would be Mila Kunis.
So she's beautiful.
She's lovely, but, you know, if they had to have done some kind of drops to make her eyes super doughy and that glassy.
Oh.
And they had to have somebody sting her lips to make them quite that full and pouty.
Oh, my.
Yeah. I mean, she was pretty in this, but she was also a little, I don't know, insipid.
Well, like I said, she's supposed to be an ingenue. She's been raised under the iron fist of her elder sister, who doesn't let her wander much, apparently, mm-hmm. or only sees the world the way that she chooses, you know.
Right. I'm not sure if I felt she was putting it on too thickly or, I don't know, just the character wasn't to my taste.
How about when she turned bad?
I kind of felt like I wasn't really buying it.
I don't know.
I liked her bad.
I liked her bad.
I liked Rachel Wise bad.
Well, yeah, but Rachel Wise bad is the fun bad. She's the one who, you know, she's the serpent. She's the one you know see in the garden, but don't necessarily pay it heed until later.
I guess I didn't really love it, but I didn't really hate it.
I thought there were brilliant parts of this movie.
Yes.
There were definitely wonderful, magical. I mean, I think it's a great fantasy movie.
I like the story. I thought the story was fantastic.
The story was very strong.
Yeah. I felt like I really wanted to like James Franco more than I did.
Hmm.
No, I don't think you need to.
I don't mean, like, the character. I mean, like, the performance. I thought he was a little bit too smiley.
No.
Well, I think he was, maybe he was trying to play, I'm a faker, and I need to
I think a better actor could have done that with more nuance than Franco did.
Plus, he does that with better nuance in, like, Spider-Man 3.
I know, when Franco is on, he's on.
Yeah.
But I kind of felt like he was maybe trying to play too much up than he's capable of?
Possibly.
I mean, he wasn't Frank Morgan. We'll give him that, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, did anybody catch the kind of the direct correlation between Oz and the Wizard of Oz at the end when he's giving the gifts?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that was another one that was a reference.
That wasn't even a mirror. That was like, okay, we're doing, you know, I think they were trying to say...
Is that reference from the movie or is that reference from the books?
It happens. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh yeah, it happens in both. But I felt like the way they set it up was they were trying to reference how it was done in the movie.
Oh right, it's the end. The wizard gives up gifts.
Yeah, he gives to the China girl and to the engineer.
Tinker, thank you.
And at the end, he says to Glinda, like, step behind the curtain with me. And there were so many.
I've got your surprise right here behind my curtain.
Well, I've got this right here. Hold on. That's not it.
No,
not that.
No, Michelle Williams just doing that. That was...
Here it is.
Oh, my.
tight in here.
Phrasing?
There were moments when I was waiting for the Waka Chica music.
Why do you need to take her wand from her?
She has her power in it. Wait a minute.
I also noticed that the spellcasters had foci.
That is true.
But except for Theodora. What did Theodora have?
Her magic was inside her, which is her fire was inside her, which is why her tears burned her.
Oh, gotcha. Oh. I thought her tears burned her because it was water.
Okay.
Oh, I don't
Can
know.
I just tell you guys, I love...
What the... I'm just making shit up.
Of course you're making
shit
up.
I like it.
But I think her tears burned her because it was water. You know? That's why she burns at the end. Oh, what a world, what a world. You know?
But she doesn't burn. She melts.
Whatever.
I guess she melts and smoke comes out. So I guess it's a similar thing.
Yeah. That's,
guys, sorry, I really like the part with the fight between the evil witch and Glinda. And she's like, what's wrong, Glinda? Do you not have any more bubbles left? And, you know.
Oh, she says bubbles.
Bubbles are just for show.
Bubbles are just for show.
Oh, I got this clip from the start of that fight.
You and I aren't finished yet. You have the throne, Glinda. What more could you want?
I want my father back, you son of a bitch.
That was a great cut.
Oh my god. Chris was doing the sound bits earlier, and he called me up and he said, listen to this. And then I started petting Ava, and I couldn't hear it because it went down too low. And he's like, well, you moved at the exact point. He's like, listen again. And I heard it, and I went, oh, my God. You know. Oh, yes. And I love that you picked another fantasy movie, Prince of
Right,
Pride,
that we so, did.
That we've done.
That's why I had that sitting around.
Yeah, and it was the old, you know, you killed my father.
Prepared
and so I have to say, not that I love chick fights, but I really love the bubble thing because I've never heard a line like that before. I mean, it just seemed kind of fresh to me. And
what I liked was the end of the fight, though, the culmination. Spoilers. Was when Evanora is standing over her and she holds up her hand, and she has a physical response and she looks at her and she goes, "What have you done?"
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that she not only has her focus, her pendant, she's mm-hmm. broken the gem.
Yeah. Right. And that Pete, I'm glad Fantastic. You brought that up because I was confused and because the audio description didn't explain it at the time. So I had to say to Chris, what the hell just happened?
I had to stop it, kind of go back and explain it. Right. So.
So that part did need to be explained.
So I was actually kind of glad that Glinda solved her own problem at the end, because it kind of felt like, from a modern gender politics standpoint, all these women were fighting until a man came along and fixed everything for them.
No, they were fighting.
but at the end, you know, Glinda solved her own problems.
So. Oh, I wanted to bring up also the reason why I liked Mila when she turned evil.
Ah.
Was because of the fact that you could actually see the flecks of spit. Like, she really committed. Well, I mean, she committed to the point where she was, like, frothing.
Yeah.
But the point where he says, you know, I know that you are this way, not of your own design. So, you know, mm-hmm. if you want to, I will.
Yeah.
And she pauses for a second.
Oh, yeah.
And she looks back at him and goes, never!
Never!
Like, good.
Never!
Good for
right.
you.
That was,
commit,
that was
baby,
a well
commit.
Done, yeah. Because there was that moment, and you did see, and
well,
that was good.
You know, once you've gone evil, you can't go back.
You never
go back.
I mean, and her heart was withered, so she
right.
couldn't.
Right.
Can I just say, I think I have, I think I just came up with a D&D game in my head right now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Like, basically, you know.
Which was already done in Dragon Magazine in the 80s.
Oh, was it? Oh. I thought I just created this, that it would be like kind of renewing her heart and this whole quest for some guy that it was actually in love with her the whole time.
Well, wait, if you say it on the show, somebody's going to steal it and make a lot of money off it. Yep. So.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to run a game with
you know our dozens of listeners might run out and make money off of your idea.
We have easily ones of listeners.
Yeah.
Easily.
Absolutely.
So yeah, so as far as like so he gets the girl in the end as you know you could tell by that clip. But here's the so he fails at getting the girl in the beginning and it's the same girl and it's the reason why he ends up with Glinda is because he's actually in love with her doppelganger. And is that really fair?
No. But the flip side of that is that Glinda supports him throughout the whole thing, even though she knows he's a phony.
Yes.
She sees within him something greater, and she actually sticks around and,
she says,
encourages
I...
him to go to greater lengths.
Absolutely. And she, like you said, Pete, she knows he's a phony, and she says, look, I know.
I might
she
says this.
Not actually be a wizard.
Yeah.
Yes, I know.
Oh.
Well, at least not any kind of wizard we were expecting.
You could tell.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can also tell you're weak, selfish, slightly egotistical, and a fibber.
She's just reading from my resume.
Right. In short, he's Harry Flashman.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if he's as despicable as Harry.
He's kind of
despicable. No, he had a problem. He didn't want to murder anybody.
True, but there are little bits in there that you just know he's in it for the cache, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So.
For the cake.
For the cache.
Oh, I thought you meant cake.
No, cache. The cake is live, Sharon. Come on.
Okay.
Yeah. If there's something that the 2000s have taught us, it's that, okay?
Well, I know we all mean the same thing.
So what I was getting at was this Easter egg here, from the beginning of the movie when he loses the girl.
I need to tell you something, Oscar.
That's never a good start to a conversation.
John Gale asked me to marry him.
Aha!
So that's Dorothy's mother. Yep. Because if John Gale proposed, that means John Gale's brother is Henry Gale, and that's Dorothy's uncle, which makes...
Annie. Annie Gale, which makes her Dorothy's mother.
Dorothy's mother.
Ah, but...
Outstanding Holmes. How did you figure it out?
I took it even a little bit farther.
Uh-huh.
Was he Dorothy's father?
That would be unlikely.
Yeah, but we weren't told that she wasn't pregnant.
Well, you're reading into something that wasn't there.
I know.
Right,
but it could be.
But that's the whole point. It never fully came to fruition with them.
Right.
So.
Well, I mean... Let's examine it even further. Maybe the strong man from the circus is actually Dorothy's father.
Oh,
because
I,
you have just as much evidence.
Ching!
No, I mean, you know that they've dated. You know that he loves her. You know that the mom used to make him apple pies. I mean, I'm just saying.
That Annie's mom made him apple pies.
Yes.
Okay.
You guys can't get the connection there?
I get the idea that he was a suitor.
Well, it depends what you think.
That they were serious. That they were a serious thing.
Okay.
Until he decided to you know, take it on the road.
I just want to have my little fantasy, Pete. That's the wizard.
I'm agreeing with you.
You can tell when he opens the door that this woman he's actually in love with, and everybody else is just meaning.
Yeah, because
well, plus, you know, there's the whole music box thing.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So anyway,
he really cared about her. He was honest with her.
So there's a little bit of, you know, that level of complication in the story that I'm wondering if the audience is, you know, even close to the same. And yet, you know, I looked it up and this movie was rated PG. And in this day and age, a PG movie is pretty uncommon.
True.
You know, most things that come out that have any action at all in them are PG-13.
And it's a Sam Raimi too, which that surprises me.
Right, right.
Because even the Spider-Man are...
I don't have, as a teacher, I don't have a big objection to this movie. I just think, I guess it's on two different levels, and I'm just kind of wondering what a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old would think of it. So maybe I have to do some experiments.
So you should ask our 6- and 8-year-old listeners.
Yes. Yeah.
How do you feel about this?
Yeah, no, or we can find some kids and ask.
They're going to tell you that it's an absolute feast for the eyes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it really is. Like, from the moment he sets down and you got those giant primary colored flowers.
Oh, my God, yes. For a moment there, it was like, wow. And I thought, was this a Tim Burton film? No, it's Sam Raimi. Never mind.
Right.
I liked.
If it was Tim Burton, they'd all be, like, black.
Well,
it wouldn't be quite so golden. It would be a little bit darker. The one thing, though, Sam Raimi, you need to cut back on... are the rainbow motifs. It was bad enough with the rock formations and the clouds.
I don't know, but it's Oz. There's a lot of rainbows.
Right, you got the over the rainbow connection. Not the rainbow connection, that's Kermit.
Yeah. I also loved the fantasy creepy music. Who did the music for this?
Oh, Danny Elfman. Masterful.
Another reason why I thought it was a Burton film.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I can see that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, can we do you have any clips from the monkey? Because I love the monkey.
I do. I've got this one right here.
Love the monkey.
I'll get that big pile of gold, and you can have a nice pile of bananas, all right?
Bananas. Oh, I see. Because I'm a monkey, I must love bananas, right? That is a vicious stereotype.
You like bananas?
Of course I love bananas. I'm a monkey. Don't be ridiculous. I just don't like you saying it.
I don't know why, but I love that line.
I really did like that scene, great moment, actually.
I mean,
and this one right
who
here.
Who doesn't love flying monkeys?
Where are you going? She said to do what she did. Just because she jumped off the cliff, you're going to jump off the cliff? I have wings.
Fantastic line.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much everything that came out of the monkey's mouth, I just adored, and mm-hmm. I would be his groupie.
He has a name, you know.
Finley,
okay.
Yeah,
which
don't
is
just
funny
say the monkey.
The crossover characters make his name Frank Finley, who's actually a very talented British actor.
Oh.
And also, Zach Braff, I mean J.D., mm-hmm. also appeared in person.
Hey, Chris, don't just say J.D. Say his name.
Zach Braff.
J.D.
Zach Braff.
John Dorian.
Okay.
Zach Braff.
Was actually there in person in the Winky town.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he offered her. He said he didn't know which bouquet of flowers she wanted.
Oh, really?
And the reason, and I had to explain to Sharon that wasn't the monkey. And she's like, yeah, that was the monkey's voice. I'm like, yes, it was the monkey's voice.
I was so confused. Character. I was so very confused. I didn't get it. I have to be honest. It was like watching an episode of Bob's Burgers, and I said, Chris, that's Archer. And he goes, no, it's Bob. Maybe
it's actually, you got that backwards. Yeah,
sorry. Yeah. I was so confused. Okay.
Speaking of Bipolar Express, here's this little girl right here.
Please,
fine! Fine! You want to come? Come! We'll all go. It'll be a big party.
Let's go kill ourselves, a witch!
Yeah.
This is a character who later whips out a knife, okay?
Yeah. Yes. So you get the feeling that maybe China Girl's a little bit unstable.
You know what?
You just saw your whole family wipe down. What are you thinking?
Well,
she's unstable.
She's like Batman.
Well, wait a minute. Kids are like that. They can be absolutely, you guys know, please let me have a chocolate ice cream. Please let me. And they're throwing themselves on the floor. And 2 seconds later, if you give them the thing they want, they're like, I love you, Mom.
Now I want an ice cream sandwich.
Thank you.
Oh, God, now I do, too, and it's international, or it's National Ice Cream Day.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Well, that gives you a time frame on which we're recording.
Absolutely.
So if I don't get this out for 2 weeks, you'll be like, what the hell? You know what? Every day is ice cream day. So, folks, just go out and get some ice cream.
It is ice cream day.
You know, Cold Stone is my happy place. True story.
I thought fantasy movies were your happy place.
That was so moving.
So the way this movie was made... There are some obvious treats because it was made to be shown in 3D.
Yes.
And if you didn't see it in 3D, those snapdragons and the belt and the balloon that's snapping right in your face, and you know, a couple other things, the baboons like flying right into the camera. Those shots are kind of not the way you show things in movies. You know what I mean?
Yes.
They're not great shots because they're obviously there for the 3D cookie.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Chris, I wanted to ask you about some colors. Because I'm blind, you told me that when you read the books that the Munchkins are supposed to be in
blue,
and you said they weren't.
In this movie, they were.
Oh, they were. Okay. But you said that the Winkies...
No, she introduced the Quatlings
as Quatling.
People in yellow.
Okay.
And in the books, the Winkies are in yellow, and the Quatlings are in red.
I'm so confused. So it was just opposite in the movie,
what about
right?
the Tinkers?
They're not a thing.
But they make the Tin Man, don't they?
No, a Tinker made the Tin Man. Well, replaced parts of the Tin Man.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. He's part of the group of Tinkers. He's a Tinker, therefore he's one of the group of Tinkers.
I don't think
Who reminded me of the old guys from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
I never saw that one.
I was expecting them to break into. I was hoping they would break into From the Ashes of Disaster, Grow the Roses of Success.
There was a song by the Munchkins that I thought I was...
Oh, yeah. Song that goes nowhere. Yeah. That's awesome.
No, I know, but I just... It was happy and Munchkin-y.
Uh-huh.
And I... Yeah. I liked the whole... Wait, what?
It was cut off.
That it was cut off. I thought that was hilarious.
I thought that was fantastic.
I didn't even realize it was cut off, was it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he stopped. He said, stop dancing! And they're like, okay. He's like, at ease, and they
come out of their position. You're right. Yeah. So I liked the whole plan at the end. You know, he's like, okay, so I have seamstresses and guys with pitchforks, and this is supposed to be my army.
And as it turns out, those are everything he needs.
Yeah. And I...
Oh, yeah. Oh, because of this right here.
I love that.
You want me to lead an army that can't kill?
If this was easy, we wouldn't need a wizard, would we?
God, she's got some great lines in this. Linda has great lines in this movie.
Yes. There are some bad old jokes, like the joke of him flailing around in the shallow water. I mean, that's right. As old as film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so funny.
And it's a Sam Raimi.
Yeah. And then her telling him to come out of the water, and you know he's like, no, I'm fine. And she said something about the water fairies, and he's like, yeah, no, they're fine. And she's like, well, they have sharp teeth, and then they start biting him. And
right. And that reminded me of Labyrinth.
That reminded me of Labyrinth too. Mm. So if you haven't seen Labyrinth,
we'll put it on the list.
Oh, and they also had the water in the face trick, Abbott Costello.
Yes.
Yes.
Like the clown thing.
Or the spinning clam. Yeah.
And speaking of clowns, why did the clown rat him out in the beginning of the
Because movie? Clowns are inherently evil. We discussed this back in Halloween.
I know. You guys are just... I don't have a problem with clowns. Maybe it's because I'm blind. Maybe blind people don't have a problem with
clowns. So I want to say that Bruce Campbell is wasted in this.
He's wasted in most cameos.
I'm not sure why he put him there. He could have done something more interesting with him.
Yeah.
And you know Bruce Campbell has to appear in anything Sam Raimi does.
That goes without saying. It's contractually obligated.
Right. And you know what? I didn't notice Ted Raimi, but he's listed on the credits, so I know he must
because
have
he
been
has
in.
This enormous mustache on.
Oh, okay.
He's done up as a outlandishly turn of the century Kansas farmer.
Hmm. Okay. I didn't notice him, but... And, you
he's
know,
the one,
as,
he's the one
I,
who kept calling Oz the Big Phony. Why did you do it, you Big Phony?
Okay. So the thing you said, like, it seemed like a Tim Burton movie, so I wasn't looking for Ted Raimi.
See, exactly.
And I usually know to look for him.
Yep, Ted and Bruce Campbell.
Anything else that is interesting about the making or the background of this movie to you?
I feel that... I'm not as familiar with the source material as you are, but I'm very pleased that they followed it a little bit more closely than Wizard of Oz did.
Yes.
I like the fact that they had the kind of nods to Wizard of Oz with the changing from a black and white or sepia to, you know, very intense color. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that they did the matting. I like the fact that...
just the aesthetic that they used.
From a cinematographic point of view, it was really very engaging.
Right.
I also like...
Oh, the poppies, too. Because we know that the poppies are very
right,
close.
Right, definitely a reference to the movie. Yes.
I liked the fact that they made them flying baboons because that made them more terrifying.
Yes, that's true.
I like the fact that they had a friendly flying monkey, which goes to show you that not all flying monkeys are bad.
That's true.
And,
but they do like bananas.
I love the little throwaway gags, like the puff of red smoke and the lion looking panicked and running away.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing. I forgot. Did they reference everybody?
They also yelled out coward.
Yes, he also calls it, that's why he says, fear my greatness.
Right.
Right. But they also reference, I don't think they reference the Tin Man. They reference the Scarecrow, and they reference the
Lion. They reference the Scarecrow, but they don't really, I mean, so the Scarecrow was made by Munchkins in the books.
Okay, and he's made by Quadlings. And
right. Right. And you know, the Scarecrow doesn't actually show up in this movie. He's just, you know, I can make a Scarecrow.
Right.
Okay, that's
exactly.
Cool. Carry on.
And then he looks at the mask and he goes, good.
Right. Okay. And, you know... yells at a lion and calls it a coward.
Right.
But there's no... I guess the presence of the Tinkers is a reference to the Tin Man?
Possibly, sure.
I guess.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah?
I'm going to have to look back at the workshop again. I feel like I'm missing something in the workshop.
Oh, you think there might have been, like, an Easter egg in the background?
Possibly.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the, the parallels that they tried to make but didn't really make derail the movie.
Right.
Okay, Sharon.
Yes.
Not having... You know, I kind of feel like 50% of this movie was the visuals.
Yes.
It's okay.
How do you feel about this movie having, you know, been deprived of those visuals?
I liked the story. I think I mentioned some of the hard parts. The same actor playing the flying monkey, and, you know, we talked about that. So I still thought the audio description did a great job. I would definitely recommend this movie to other visually impaired people.
Oh, okay. Great.
The movie with the description that's on the Blu-ray.
With audio description, yes.
Right, okay.
Absolutely.
Have we had any other movie with James Franco in it? I can't think of one.
I can't either.
So I don't think so. No. We need to do a James Franco where he actually does well, because I kind of feel that he failed in this one. Well, okay, let me take that back. He didn't fail. He could have done a lot better.
He could have done better. I agree. He was adequate. He wasn't outstanding.
Right, right.
And I think that Michelle Williams and Rachel Weisz and Mila Kunis all did fairly well. Mm-hmm. Or at least
I thought Rachel Weisz knocked it out of the park. I think
Michelle Williams did too.
Yes.
Quite frankly.
I kind of feel like Mila Kunis overdid the ingenuity. Is that a word? It is now.
It is now.
Well, I have to disagree. I just for the record, not because
sure.
those people will ever listen to our podcast, but I disagree because the whole thing is, it's the kind of movie that it is. It's a fantasy movie.
That's so very zen.
It's not zen. It's now. I'm just saying that.
So that was now, this is zen?
Yes.
Oh.
I feel
yeah,
that
just dropped dead.
I liked all of their performances, and it's not just because I'm a nice person that I'm saying this. I think if it's done for kids sometimes, we said that we don't think it would be the best kids movie, but I think the original intention was that it was for people our age and for children. And sometimes kids need a little bit of overacting. Look, sometimes you just need to Shatner
that's
it.
That's true. Sometimes it needs to be big. Yeah. Sometimes it has to be almost melodramatically big.
So that's my opinion. So I guess I disagree with my husband a little bit.
No, that's a very solid summation, and I think that's why I'm more prone to agree with you than with Chris in this instance. Because I think that she did bring a necessary level to that character.
Peter, you're dead to me.
Christopher, you know that I love you, but now I'll have to kill you.
Pete, you ignorant slut.
Oh, my gosh. Keep it clean.
Come on, man. That's what I had to say to Jim.
So, I have a dog here that needs love. So, are we ready?
I think we should rate this movie.
Okay.
Let's rate this movie.
All right.
I get to jump in here.
Oh, I wanted to say one more thing. One more thing.
No! No!
One more thing.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. One more thing is that I thought the China girl was CGI.
She's a marionette.
She is a marionette, and only her face is animated.
Yeah, so it was both. It was a combination.
Right. So she's a combination of CG and puppeteering.
I think we saw a combination of that all throughout this whole...
Yeah.
Not just puppeteering, but a combination of CGI and practical effects.
I kind of feel like most of this movie was green-screened.
Not according to the thing that I read, but... Okay.
I don't know how much of the background that I was seeing was actually a physical thing that existed.
I think a lot of the background was green screen, but a lot of the stuff that they were interacting with, and like the throne room was really the throne room.
Okay.
It wasn't just, you know, a CGI chair and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That was actually
That's another connection to The Wizard of Oz, the throne room and how he got his start and all of that with the Tinkers.
Right. Yeah,
and
they tie that up to the movie, I think.
Yeah, I like that. You know, because when they go in to see the wizard, you know, there's the fire and then
the
that really, the smoke and the lion and how you see him in different ways and he's so scary and la la la. And I like that. I like that this is kind of, you know, your prequel to The Wizard of Oz, and I like that they didn't mess anything up greatly.
Yes,
I loved that.
This is why I didn't want Chris to have that last thing.
Sorry.
Okay.
Okay.
You got
go.
The last word, Sharon. You happy now?
Yes.
Okay. Now we can rate
it. Okay, Chris. On a scale from 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Oz the Great and Powerful?
I will give Oz the Great and Powerful 3 gold and 3 silver.
Oh, all right.
Because I kind of felt it was... I really enjoyed watching it. But there were some disappointments in the movie, like Franco's performance, like Mila Kunis' performance.
Mm.
Okay.
But at the same time, I could watch this movie over and over, I kind of feel.
True. Yeah. Fair enough.
Okay.
All right. Sharon, on a scale from 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Oz the Great and Powerful?
I'm going to say it's 5 gold pieces because...
Oh!
Yeah, I am.
Wow, Princess Bride level, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, you mean it's 2.5 times better than Excalibur?
I rate
only
it
to you.
Wait,
only to
no,
you.
Hold on. I rated Excalibur as a 4. So.
Well, yeah, but you were wrong about that.
No, that's my opinion.
She wasn't wrong about that. You're the rule.
So, let's start World War III now. Because I could see things in my head. I think that even though I'm blind, I could see the color And it just seemed, I believed that they were in this magical place. I believed it was the Land of Oz. I believed in the witches. I believed in Glinda. I believed that the China Doll was a China Doll. And, you know, I wish I could have seen it. I guess I'm saying I wish I wasn't blind. I don't know what I'm saying there. But her voice just was so perfect for me. And the China Doll.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she was great.
And the one that played the dragon in Aragon, but I can't remember the actress's name. Yes, I love her. I mean, I loved all their voices, but I just especially...
Now, I wonder if, like, did you picture like, a dragon walking around and saying her lines in this movie?
No, I didn't. I pictured somebody really sexy. And
all right, so five gold. You're going with five gold.
Yeah, that's my final statement. Yes.
Closing it up. Okay, Pete, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Oz, the Great and Powerful?
I am going to rate this as 3 gold pieces and 8 silver pieces.
Does that mean you outbid me?
Yes.
Wow, okay. You
get 5 silver.
Wow.
Look, why couldn't you just give it 4, Pete, and just be right in the middle?
Let me tell you why.
What knocks those 2 silver off?
It was Chris's argument against Franco's performance.
Okay.
And that made sense to me, and I was like, yes, that's the one thing that was kind of niggling away at me throughout the whole movie, was the fact that he's not dialing it in, but he's certainly not at his peak
right.
performance.
He's not completely
selling
it.
You can tell that even the voiceover actors were committed to their characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel he had the full commitment to Oscar Diggs that the role needed.
I don't know. I just wonder if he was just trying to play a cad and just trying.
Well,
to
he be- was, but I don't think he had. I don't think the depth.
But like I said, he plays that kind of level of con and cad in Spider-Man 3 when Harry gets his memory back, and he's manipulating Peter. You know.
Okay. Yeah.
And you just don't see it.
Right.
Got to agree. Basically, because I said it first.
Well,
I still stick with a 5. So you guys are just wrong.
All right.
So.
Right.
Well, that'll wrap it up for Oz the Great and Powerful. Pete, what's our next movie? Because Sharon chose The Wizard of Oz, and I chose Oz the Great and Powerful.
Our next movie is going to be Legend.
Whoa! Oh, my God.
And I'm doing this mostly because I feel very badly for Tim Curry now that he has had stroked out.
Oh, yeah. Terrible
things,
yeah.
But also because we really need to see Tom Cruise before he became Tom Cruise.
Yeah, he's not really anybody in Legend. But, you know, that's so I haven't seen this movie since... I had it
college.
On VHS in 1985.
There you go.
The funny thing is, I still have that VHS in the basement.
How about that?
But I don't have anything to play it on.
Ha ha.
Well, Chris, how can we get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me by grabbing me firmly in both hands.
Yeep!
All right, you can email the show at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on social media in various ways. Pete, tell us some.
You can find us on Facebook at Dragonreel Podcast, I'm pretty certain.
Nope, it's facebook.com/dragonreel.
/dragonreel. Okay, and what are we on Twitter? At Dragonreel?
At Dragonreel.
Mm-hmm.
I knew you could help us out.
There you go.
You can also go to iTunes and please, please, please rate the show. We really need ratings to get the word out there about Dragonreel. We've got a bunch of likes on Facebook, but we're not seeing the ratings, and that will bump us up in search engines.
Yay!
Excellent.
Also, if you want to get the movies that we are talking about, you can go to our website, dragonreel.com. And pretty much every movie that we talk about has a link where you can go to Amazon and find that movie. And if you buy it there, we'll get a few pennies in our coffers. It'll help keep the website up and going.
Yay.
And if you go to our website, you can also rate the movie yourself. We have a little scale on every single one of these. There's a little poll where you can rate the movie that we talked about.
And if
Excellent.
You do, leave us a comment, because we like to read the comments.
Oh, we love comments.
Yeah.
Even if they're bad.
If they're bad, we'll find you and we'll kill you. We have a certain set of skills.
No, that's lame news.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
So it's a different kind of fantasy altogether.
Right.
So keep watching those fantasy movies.
Mm-hmm.